This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. We have a great lineup for you as we hear from the runner-up and third-place riders at this year's Rolex Kentucky three-day event, Lauren Kiefer and Maya Black. They will be here later on in the program. And we'll also be hearing from Bobby Costello, who is chairman of selectors for the United States Equestrian Federation. And he'll be here to review this year's Rolex event, which was a selection trial for the Rio Olympic Games. And we begin with Rob Burke, the USEA CEO, who's here to review the Rolex event from his perspective. Hi, Rob. Welcome back.
Hello, Chris. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And you're still in recovery, are you, from a very busy week at the Rolex Kentucky three-day event there? But you had a support crew.
We did. We had media staff as well as the folks who we were lucky enough to have on site running our booth. We even brought back Joe Whitehouse from the West Coast to come and hang out with us and work with some of our donors and sponsors. And it was a huge team this time for us.
And you always have the booth, which is very active and a chance to connect with members old and new.
We did. I always loved hanging out in the booth. And, you know, I saw one of my Pony Club friends growing up came in, Aaron Cantino, stopped in to say hi, and only at Rolex can I see people who I haven't seen for over 20 years.
Yeah, it's a wonderful time. Now, just remind everybody what we do on the booth there at Rolex, because it is a showcase each year for members to connect with you all the staff.
Sure, yeah. Our booth, it tends to just be for member relations. So we have our folks there on site. They're able to re-register people as members, register new members. And we also sell some of our various logo wear just so our members can show their support for U.S. eventing. This year we had a lot of Olympic kind of themed clothing, and that seemed to be very popular. And then on top of that, it serves as kind of a staging site for our event college, which we host throughout the competition to educate the public about the sport of eventing.
So there's always something to shop for as well as to be educated at the booth. And you also spoke to Sue Smith, is it, from the University of Kentucky about the collapsible fence research that you're funding?
Yeah, that's right. So we, as part of our cross-country activities, what we had invited Dr. Suzanne Smith and her research team from the University of Kentucky to come in and talk a little bit about the collapsible and frangible research that they're doing. So in relation to cross-country fences and how to study effective ways to prevent kind of the more catastrophic falls that have been seen over the years in the sport. You know, we're doing everything we can to increase safety for the horse and rider, and that's one particular way. So over the last several months, we've been fundraising for research, and luckily for us, we were able to fund another year of research by Suzanne Smith. So yeah, we were lucky enough for her to talk about what they're doing and how the study will work, and it was really well received by those in attendance, and a lot of amazing questions came forward. So, I guess that's the benefit of being in Lexington, is we're so close to those groups and their research groups. So it was fun.
And it is also a wonderful opportunity to connect with the many loyal sponsors of the USEA from around the country.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, we had... It's always funny for me to go to Rolex because sometimes I feel like I'm not actually watching the competition. I get to go and meet with our sponsors. You know, I saw Charles Owen, Point Two, Vicio Savary, Attaquan. You go down the list of all the major sponsors, Neutrina, Stanley Hay. It would take me probably an hour just to list out all the folks who are lucky enough to, or were lucky enough to have donate to our sport. Help support our educational programs, our competitive programs. I end up having lots and lots of meetings and running off to catch the end of the competition as much as I can so that I can enjoy the sport I love so much.
So what did you see of the competition?
Well, I saw some of the best rides I'd seen in a long time on dressage day. You know, some of the, of course, everybody watches Michael Young and wonders what he eats and what level he's on, because he's an amazing rider. But from an American standpoint, I saw a lot of our top professionals like Philip Button and Boyd Martin have fabulous rides. And at the same time, I saw what I consider to be some of our amazing young and up and coming riders like Lauren Kiefer and Maya Black, who I believe is a West Coast rider. So kind of near and dear to my heart to see our West Coast riders coming out and really doing so well at Rolex. So I saw a couple of really fabulous dressage rides. I saw another person who I remember riding against when I was a kid, Matt Brown, put in a pretty stellar dressage test. And then on cross country day, I mean, I would say that the course actually was in really great shape, despite the little bit of rain we've been having. I think the rain that came this week actually made the footing even better. And while by the end of the day, it did get, it started to get a little sloppy in a couple places, I think our riders and our horses really stood up to the test, and we had a fabulous safe day. And, there were some amazing rides out there. I think of Sinead Halpin had a fabulous ride. Lauren Kiefer is just unfazed by anything. I'm constantly amazed by her. And, again, Maya Black was great to watch, and Philip Dutton's the master, and then again to watch Michael Young get through the course and just make it look easy is always a treat. And then I luckily got to sit through and watch most of the show jumping, and as the day came to an end, it was sad for a couple of folks. I saw there were quite a few rails going, and I think that probably is a testament to the difficulty of Derek's track the previous day, coupled with the conditions. I think we saw some rails that we might not have seen on a regular basis from a lot of those horses, but all in all, just an absolute treat.
And Richard Jeffery had kept the time quite tight on the show jumping as well. So they had to keep the pedal down.
They did. It was, and there was a couple of wicked little jumps. I kept watching the FEI, the purple and white jump, kept following it. I'm a really bad spectator in that I yell out loud. And and so every time I saw that FEI jump, I would yell at the FEI jump. Stay up. But it didn't work, unfortunately, for me. So,
and the weather was typical Kentucky, wasn't it? After the rain on Saturday, you then had a bit of everything on the Sunday for the show jumping.
We did. I always say to it's kind of cruel, but I say I like all four seasons when we're at Rolex, and the reason is because for our merchandise shop, it means we'll clear out everything from t-shirts to winter jackets. So while it didn't get that cold this weekend, we did, like you said, on Sunday alone, we saw rain, sun, everything you could ask for. So it was tough on a couple of those riders. I think I remember Lynn and Donner having to deal with the rain, and maybe a couple others. All of a sudden the sky opened up and it unleashed. But then you couple that with a couple of really beautiful, beautiful moments. I think of early on in the day on Sunday, just a beautiful sunny day with some clouds in the sky. And, probably my favorite, one of my favorite moments of the weekend was the Roger Haller Memorial that we had there on site. So for everybody who didn't know Roger, a fabulous, amazing man, so good to the sport in so many ways, international rider, world-renowned official, a leader in the sport, and for our association and others. And boy, what an amazing testament to Roger that the skies opened up, and it was just gorgeous. And we got to finish it off by blowing bubbles into the head of the lake. And You know, I could just see Roger giggling at the idea of that. That was a really special time.
Wonderful. And of course, we paid tribute through Mike Tucker, who I'm sure, as well as being on the podcast for us to pay tribute to Roger, was also there at Rolex to pay tribute to him. Wonderful. So, importantly, did you find out what Michael Young has for breakfast?
I did not. But I know where he stays now. So it's one of those, like, I slept at this hotel and I woke up and I was the best there was. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe if we all stay at the same place that Michael Young stays, we'll be able to ride like him.
We must all dream on.
Yeah, that's right. That's
absolutely.
Right.
So altogether, a very successful event for the USEA and a time to, as you said, welcome new members and also revisit old friends and those valuable sponsors, Rob.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't thank all those that made it possible for us to be there and have these successes. You know, we had a number of professional riders, experts, I think of Max Corcoran, Tammy Smith, a number of others that were our professors for the event college, and again, our sponsors that make it possible, and then again, our fabulous staff that I know Joe and I have always talked about how great they've been for us, and they continue to be.
Wonderful. All right, Rob, and now focus is on Tryon, isn't it, for the AECs this year?
That's where I am right now. I am. We are on site doing an inspection with our organizing team, and I can't say enough about how amazing this facility is going to be. I would easily put it on the same level as the Kentucky Horse Park as far as the amenities that are here, and we've been able to get a look at the status of the cross country course, and I can happily say there are well over 100 cross country jumps right next to me, and then the thing that is going to be just absolutely amazing, and people should look for more information in the future, is the cross country course footing is unlike anything we've seen in the world. It's we are essentially going to not only have a turf-covered entire cross-country course, but it will have footing. I mean, it'll have 6 to 8 inch footing base that is just, as I said, all weather, can stand up to anything, and just amazing. You know, we haven't seen anything like this in the U.S. and I would argue that it's probably there other facilities around the world can't compare either. So I can't wait for the membership to see it.
And the course designer is?
Captain Mark Phillips will return. And I know he's been doing, you know, a lot of dirt, earth had to be moved to make this cross country course. And I know that Captain Mark has been eagerly waiting for all the earth moving to finish so that he can finish his layout, but he's got some really some clever plans in place for how to best use the terrain out here. And there is terrain, I will say that. This is not going to be a flat course.
This is North Carolina.
This is North Carolina, the hills of North Carolina, or mountains, I should say.
Well, all that to look forward to in September, of course, but some more qualifiers ahead. We've been previewing them here on the podcast. So the next one will be the event at Rebecca Farm, when we'll be talking to Sarah Broussard to preview that in a few weeks' time.
Great.
Time flies. We've had the spring flurry of the Gold Cup qualifiers. Then we have a little bit of a gap, don't we, before we get to Rebecca Farm?
We do. You know, we'll be busy. We've got quite a few things in between, but including our intercollegiate championships, which I know we'll be talking about shortly. But we are looking forward. You know, it's always difficult to see these huge events like Rolex and our fabulous Gold Cup Series events pass by, but always love going to them.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be previewing the rest of them this season leading up to Tryon. Thank you very much indeed for coming on the program, and good luck with the preparations for the AECs there later this year.
Thank you, Chris.
Maya Black rode Doesn't Play Fair into third place at this year's Rolex Kentucky three-day event at her second attempt. Welcome to the program, Maya.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, first of all, a huge congratulations. What a fantastic event for you. Are you still on cloud nine?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it was my horse was quite fabulous this weekend. I really, was really quite excited about his performance and me for staying in the tack. That's always helpful. So I really was really, I guess I'm pretty excited to play.
Well, you must be, because it's certainly a turning point in your career. But I want to tell your story for our wider audience who may not be familiar with how you got all the way to Rolex and to be competing at this four-star level. Tell us, first of all, Maya, where it all began for you, where was home, and how your eventing career started.
Yeah, I mean, it started out on the West Coast. I'm from north of Seattle, Whidbey Island, and it definitely started my, joy for eventing. You could say started through Pony Club, and I didn't really start eventing per se when I was incredibly young. I mainly did rallies and Pony Club and went up through my A rating, and it was probably when I was a B or, C3 or B, when I was probably 15 or so, that I started eventing a bit more. And there was a wonderful lady that's out there that actually came out and watched Rolex, named Margo Carter, and she really let me kind of get my feet wet in the eventing. She had an event horse named Leroy Brown that I got to compete and do my first trainings on and first prelims on, and that horse I also was lucky enough to borrow for my B rating, since I didn't have another horse at the time. So that really kind of got me started in eventing. And then I brought along a young horse that I got as a three-year-old named Chase Arena, and that horse I, brought up through the two-star level, and she actually won the two-star out at Jersey Fresh the first year I came out with a working student out here as an eight-year-old. And so after that point, I was kind of, you could say, definitely this was something I wanted to continue with after that. So and then it kind of went from there. There was different injuries along the way with different horses. And so I had another horse that I brought up through the two-star level named Kenyagi or Keeper, and he ended up passing away of cancer, actually, about four years ago. So after that point, at that point I started with this little horse named Cody, whose name Doesn't Play Fair, and he's really the first horse I actually got to go advanced on, and now I've got to do two Rolexes with. So it's been a little bit of a long time coming, but I think that's always with horses, you just have to be patient and keep plugging away with it, and eventually as the stars align a little bit, it'll hopefully be in your favor.
Well, certainly did. You're based in Ocala, training in Ocala this winter, and you're heading back to Virginia, I understand, to be based. But let's talk about the event itself now before we talk about what's next for you, because this will be a turning point, clearly, with that kind of performance. Going into Rolex, knowing the horse park, and as you said, having been there before, how did you feel about your preparation? Because you'd had a fantastic season, of course, winning at Fork, but this was the kind of ideal preparation, I would have thought, to give you the confidence going into Kentucky again.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wanted to do, I had a little bit of a maybe different idea going into it this year versus my first time last year, in the sense I knew a little bit more what to expect, I guess you could say, in the sense that I really wanted to, I don't have currently, a lot of horses in my string. I really only have Cody and a young horse, Mowgli, who's moved up to the prelim level this year. So I don't really have a lot of other horses, per se, that I get to practice on. And so I really took that, kind of on as something I needed to keep in the back of my mind this spring. And I feel like fitness was definitely something that I wanted to improve on. From my experience last year at Kentucky with Cody. And so I did run him at probably a few more events this spring than I did last year. And I really was, and that was also, a little bit to my benefit, because I just felt like I needed a little bit of that practice as well. Since I'm not the, you know, the Bucks or the Phillips or the Boyds that has, 10 horses to go advance on one weekend, you know. So it was kind of something that was in the back of my mind that I needed to get a few advanced runs in this spring before Kentucky to keep Cody and I, you know, both sharp and also work a bit on the fitness for both of us. So yeah, I mean, it was definitely a little bit in the plan for a few of us, for, you know, both of us to run a little bit more maybe than we did last spring. So that was probably one of the things that probably I changed the most. And yeah, I mean, I just think that, you know, working on the rideability for Cody's cross country since last fall, I mean, he was a little bit unruly, which kind of led us to a few little mistakes on cross country for the first time. And I feel like that really, we were able to turn that around with Kara's help this spring and, kind of get that, you know, back in under control. And, you know, he was still a bit fresh the first few minutes on course, but then I felt like he really settled into a great rhythm at Kentucky and maybe got a touch tired at the end, but really was so, you know, tried his heart out. So it's really been a good place. So really great.
Well, the conditions, of course, and the footing were taking their toll and heavy going for a lot of horses, but how did you think he handled that? You said he got a little bit tired. Does he prefer to be on top of the ground?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And I was very quite lucky. I was number 25 out, so I was really quite lucky to, you know, it was raining when I went, but really wasn't as deep at all as it probably was a bit later in the day. So I really didn't get the worst of the conditions, which I was really grateful for. I mean, he's a big strided little horse, but, you know, he's just over 15.2 hands, and I'm, you know, pretty large myself. It's almost 6 feet. So it definitely is, was to my benefit that I got to go earlier in the day than some of the people that had to go later on, for sure, definitely.
And in terms of the dressage as well, just to put this in perspective, how was that in terms of his career performances? Was it what the best that you'd hope to take away at this stage?
No, I mean, I think we always strive to, you know, for better and better. That's kind of just the nature of, I think, all of us are being a bit perfectionist. But I was really, really pleased with, I guess you would just say, the improvement from last year. I mean, he improved by 7 points, and I think he got a 52 last year at Kentucky, and this year he got like a 45, so really going the right direction, I would say. And, you know, he's come so much so far in just his I was going to say his rideability and relaxation in the ring, so that I was so excited about that. I felt like there was some little mistakes that we had, you know, his changes can be so good, and we had a few little mistakes in the changes at the end, and, you know, Halton Rainback has always room for improvement, and, you know, a few things like that that I feel like definitely we left some marks on the table. But overall, I was really, really pleased with, a lot of the quality of the work that he did do in the ring. I, you know, really, really was quite pleased.
Let's talk about your impressions of the course, though, when you walked it, and how you felt about it after you'd ridden it, and if it rode as you'd expected, Maya.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I've had Cody for 5 or 6 years now, and, you know, kind of he's always been quite a bold cross country horse, and but it's still, once in a while, he still kind of surprises me. You know, I walk the distances, and you think that they might walk a little bit of a certain way, but he gets out there, and his stride just is amazingly large for the size of a horse he is. And, you know, that, you know, even at Kentucky, I mean, I know that even at Kentucky, that still kind of caught me off at the first combination. I mean, he kind of walks in a forward four or five, and he did it in an easy four. And, you know, at that point, I was like, okay, easy down, Cody. You need to, you know, slow down a little bit. Let's, you know, try to put this in and have it, you know, a good clean round for the rest of the round. So he ended up doing that combination and a four to a four. And that, that's something that I need to make sure that I am a little bit more aware of coming in some of these things in the future, because he does have such a huge stride that I need to make sure that I'm, you know, on top of my game to make sure that, you know, we get around cleanly and safely and all of that. He's so, you know, clean and careful on his feet. It wasn't a big deal, but it definitely, you know, it just takes you a little bit by surprise when, you know, some people are worried that their horses are not going to make the stride, and he just makes it, covers that ground up so well. So overall, I mean, I thought the course looked great. I would say my one thing was I just wasn't sure, you know, having only get to do a 4-star once a year with this one horse now, you know, and having only done it once before, I guess my biggest thing was, you know, how he was going to feel towards the end of the course. And, you know, like I said, last year he got a bit tired. And the jumps themselves, like I said, he's a very bold, brave horse. And the jumps themselves, you know, he's so honest. They really don't concern me that much. So it was probably more that how he was going to feel at the end of the course and make sure that I ride part and, you know, help him get him home safe. But as I finished, you know, as I got 3/4 the way that's around the course, he was still feeling really quite good. So it gave me a lot of confidence to just kind of keep riding on and get home.
Well, obviously, I'm sure he was glad of a good night's rest. How did he pull out the next morning, and how did he feel going into the show jumping mire?
He really felt quite good. He's such a funny little horse. Like I said, he's a little, I don't even know what you say. I call him he's a bit of a monster. You know, he's a little quirky little thing, but he looked great. He really, really did. He was full of himself and, you know, really quite chipper and, you know, trying to bite me again by the next morning, probably by even that evening. So he really was quite good. I hopped on him and had a little jump pool, you know, 5 or so jumps after the trot up on Sunday morning, and he felt completely, you know, he felt like easy to coach. You know, we had 2 show jumping today, so that was the plan, to do a little jump pool to kind of get him back in the show jumping frame of mind, because he just is such a forward-thinking horse. So, but really, he really felt great, and he looks great today.
And the show jumping itself, I mean, that, of course, is a big occasion. I know you've been in there before, but how did that feel this time?
I mean, I think that it always feels a bit, you know, for me, that's probably the phase that I feel like I can, you know, probably still get I can get more comfortable in the ring and the show jumping than probably the other phases. I feel like I'm a little bit more comfortable with them, maybe. So, you know, the show jumping at the end of the weekend, especially when you're in a competitive placing, it definitely puts a lot of pressure on. But I just try to go in there and, you know, kind of try to forget about that a bit, I guess you could say, and just try to have a good, you know, the best round that we could do and ride the smartest. And, you know, I was really, he was jumping really quite well. And, you know, it was a little bit of a bummer. I had that one rail coming off that, you know, that right-handed turn. And I think I, you know, watching the video and everything, I just think I didn't quite probably get his shoulders quite straight enough. And he just kind of flipped it with a front leg coming up. But he really felt great. And he felt like he was jumping super. I feel like that's just something that, you know, at the end of the weekend, that, you know, I have to be just that much better, you know, with a horse that, you know, has done so much over the weekend for me. I just, you know, maybe I needed to get him a touch straighter there and help keep him off that front rail, that vertical, green vertical, a teeny bit more. But, you know, he felt like he had springs in his legs, and he almost jumped me out of the tack a few times, actually. So he, you know, he was jumping super, you know, and I, you know, it's the difference of, you know, one rail in the long term is, you know, I want to do better than that for the future. But overall, the weekend was just super. So really cool.
Well, second or third at Rolex, I'm guess you'd settle for either of those.
Yeah, the top three is pretty good.
Yeah, indeed, and certainly catching everyone's eye with that performance. But we all know that these competitions are not possible without having a support crew. So let's talk about your support crew. Who was there for you at Rolex this year?
Oh my gosh, there was quite a few people. I mean, John and John Doppelmeyer have been my long-term supporters. They own Cody for me, and you know, they're really more than just owners for me. They've been, you know, really part of my family for I don't even know how long now, probably 11 or 12 years. And you know, they've helped me along. They're my horseshoers as well, and you know, they're just really wonderful people. So they were there, of course, and back in the barns. And they're not, maybe you could say, your typical owners in the sense that, you know, like I said, they're horseshoers. They do this because they love Cody and they love me. And really, they're quite hands-on, very hands-on in the barn. And, and, you know, getting to spend time with us. So, you know, they were probably, you know, they were there to enjoy this whole situation that maybe probably none of us really expected to ever happen over the last years of this kind of journey. And then they had some friends, Steph and Tom Laird, who are good friends from Idaho, and they've been together, you know, for a long time. And they were here at Kentucky last year, and they were back there with me. Caitlin Calder, which has been a long-term friend of mine, she was there, and she's helped me at many events over the last few years, and really quite knows Cody well. She's, you know, been at my lessons with me, and really been a huge supporter, and really, really loves loves the process and knows the process, having ridden through the three-star level herself. So she's great eyes on the ground and great to have in the back of the barn. I had a good friend also named Devin Rogel, who came out from Oregon, and she, this is her first time to Kentucky, and she was back there. And my parents came, Will and Shelley Black, and this is their second Rolex now, and they were wonderful to be there, and, you know, just, you know, they've just been wonderful over the years, and not really horsey people themselves, but I think they've learned to, you know, love the sport because I love it. So, and then I had a bunch of different people that, like I said, the lady Margot Carter, who had owned that, you know, my first event horse that I got to event on, you know, she was there, and in the 10-minute box with her, she brought her Seahawks, like, you know, sponge off buckets. When I was wondering where to go, and, you know, the 10-foot box, I could definitely see that was probably from my area over there, because, you know, John, one of Cody's owners, and Margo are both huge Seahawks fans, so I could pick them out in a second. And who else? I mean, I definitely think that, you know, I had some people, Pony Club friends from back in Washington State come out, and I don't know, I'm probably forgetting some other people, but just it was a great group of people. And I probably had a few more people last year, actually, quite a few more Pony Clubbers last year that came out to support me, but this year it was a great group of people. So we could fit actually all in, you know, at one Mexican restaurant table. So that was fun to be able to kind of visit together with everybody at the same time over the weekend. So.
All right. I'm guessing
it was
long
table, but it fit.
Yes, I bet there were some celebrations on that Sunday night.
Yes, yes, it was wonderful. It was great to see everybody, and I don't really get to see, you know, a lot of my friends, you know, old friends are from the West Coast, and my parents and family, and well, I should say I guess it'd be my second cousin, Lisa Fite, was out there. That was her first time at a Rolex, my dad's cousin, and, you know, she's always been a horse person, and it was her first time, and I think she had a wonderful time. And oh, of course, Janet Kurt, she's been a long time friend and supporter, and she was out there as well. So that probably kind of rounds out the main group.
The main group, yes. Well, I'm sure they were all enormously proud of you and your performance, going from 22nd at your first Rolex last year, finishing third this year with Doesn't Play Fair, a.k.a. Cody. Well, you're probably calling him some nice names by now.
Yeah, he has quite a few of them. Depends on the day. Depends on how many times he
fights me. Wonderful. Well, before you go, tell us what the plan is next for him. Obviously, a bit of a holiday for him and a pause for you. What's next on the schedule, Maya?
I'm not quite sure. You know, I'm going to have to kind of bring, you know, he will get a, you know, he'll get a break. He really enjoys his little bit of his downtime and his green grass. And, you know, he came out of this Kentucky looking quite good, and really, you know, he looks quite fit, but he's kept a good bit more weight on this year, which I've been really pleased about. So he doesn't look quite as, you know, quite as skinny maybe as some might be. But so I was really pleased with how he came out. So he'll have a bit of a break. And, you know, like I said, I'm kind of working on a few different situations about maybe where I'm going to go next in the Virginia area. And then we'll kind of make a plan between, you know, my different coaches and see kind of where we go next. But I wouldn't imagine that he'll be out doing anything probably until, I would say, the end of June, I would imagine. So he'll have a, you know, a good at least 3 weeks off, I would imagine, maybe a month.
And he can rest on his laurels at least for a little while.
Yeah,
Wonderful. Well, again, huge congratulations, Maya, finishing third there at the Rolex Kentucky 3-day event. And the very best of luck for the rest of the season and your future partnership with Doesn't Play Fair.
Thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate it. It's been a wonderful weekend. I look forward to, you know, kind of what the future holds and maybe, you know, hopefully acquiring, you know, a few more horses along the way and getting, you know, seeing where this takes us. So thank you so very much.
And our next guest is Bobby Costello, who is chairman of the U.S. Equestrian Federation Selection Committee for the eventing team. And with the Rolex Kentucky 3-day event presented by Land Rover being a selection trial for the Rio Olympic Games, we asked Bobby to share his thoughts on the event. Bobby, welcome to the program.
Hello, Chris. Good to be with you again.
Well, it was a fantastic week. Always is, you know, the highlight of our eventing calendar here in the U.S. What were your overall impressions of the event? And, of course, you know, Kentucky throws all four seasons at you in the week as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. Other than that, it was incredibly, incredibly wet. I didn't think Saturday could have been any wetter than last Saturday, but I think it actually was. Last year Saturday. But anyway, I thought the event was fantastic. It was a huge field, a very competitive field. I thought, you know, the dressage was, on the whole, very much improved for the field as a, you know, in general. We saw a lot more scores in the 40s. Still would love to see some of our riders crack into the 30s, but I think minus our friend Allison. You know, but that's okay. We had still, you know, a lot of improvement in the dressage. And in Saturday, I just didn't think it could have been better. The weather was awful, but the course held up. It definitely made it a real cross-country competition up to that point anyway. And dressage wasn't too influential after Saturday. So it was a great competition overall.
And looking at the course, obviously as familiar as you are with Derek's tactics now, in compared to previous years, how did you think this year fared, Bobby?
Right. Well, after walking it, it was very obvious to me that, you know, he was trying to make the time more influential. You know, especially if the footing is very good or if the weather is good. You know, the turf is so good there, you can be quite quick and you'll see quite a few horses in the time. I think Derek, definitely the way that the course ran this year, where you kind of went back on yourself several times, is a little bit more twisty-turny. It was definitely obvious that the time was going to be way more influential than it has been in the past, even if the weather was perfect. So, and with the inclement weather, it definitely was way more influential than it's been in the past. Not one rider made it to time. I do believe Miguel Young was the quickest with just a couple seconds over. But it was Tom White. It was a very influential track. I thought that the course itself, the jumps was just brilliant. My take on it was that it started very fair, even through the head of the lake. I thought the head of the lake, where it walked, I thought pretty straightforward, and it rode that way. But after, you know, basically after that kind of brush maze, the three stride up and down that mound, once you got to the hollow, things got very serious, and then it stayed absolutely full on, you know, four star plus after that, you know, just when the horses might be getting a little bit tired. I thought the difficulty ramped up quite a bit.
And that head of the lake, as you mentioned, it rode pretty well. Most people did 7 and 7, but there were some exceptions, not least of all Mickey Young doing 6 and 6, I think, didn't he?
Yeah. That was
what does he have for breakfast, Bobby? Do you know?
I don't know. Something that gives him a lot of but in the kindest terms. He was pretty impressive. He definitely took some chances and got a little bit lucky a few times. I mean, there's no mistaking that. But, you know, sometimes you have to do that. And I think it's very calculated on his part, where sometimes people take chances and you don't know whether they really meant it or not. It was obvious the chances that he took were very calculated, and it paid off for him, for sure.
You're referring to the long ones, right?
Yeah. like how he saw his distance for the last jump all the way down the hill from the last corner. I mean, there was no doubt that he had it in his mind that he had to, you know, really hook it to that jump, and he did. It was pretty impressive to watch.
Brings back the days of the steeplechasing phase, right?
Right. He said that's not in the sport anymore.
Exactly. All right, well, let's talk about the course again in the context of it being an Olympic year, Bobby. You know, obviously a selection trial for the U.S. riders. So in terms of asking the questions that you needed to be asked as a selector, it did all of that, and it produced the results that you were looking for. Time, as you said, was of the essence. But does that impact your, you know, is that something that's taken into consideration, or do you just look at the conditions and think, okay, well, you know, it was within the context of the competition, the time?
Well, and honestly, you know, it's a selection trial, and every rider has got to go out there and put their best performance forward. We're, you know, especially in relation to everyone else. So obviously the time was difficult to make. So we weren't really expecting that all of our top riders are going to go out there and make the time. But in relation to the field, they have to, you know, they really have to show that they're competitive, that even on a really tough day, that they can be competitive with the top of the field. And I love one day last year, I remember overhearing David O'Connor, our coach, talk to a rider, said, you know, my horse, there was another selection trial. You know, they were a little bit tough, and you know, I just wasn't able to, whatever. And David said, look, I'm not really interested to hear about how great you are when all is going your way. I want to know how you're going to step up to the plate when the conditions are tough, when your horse maybe comes out is not so easy that day. So I was like, you know, that I was just thinking to myself after that is such a great way to put it, that, you know, it's a competition, and no matter what the conditions, you have got to be able to rise to the occasion and be competitive. And for the most part, honestly, the riders that we that have been on the radar screen, for the most part, really did put in that performance on Saturday anyway.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we want to talk about the selection process, obviously, on the road to Rio here. But first of all, remind everyone who is on that selection panel right now with you, Bobby.
Sure. I chair that committee. I'm fortunate to do so. And my fellow selectors, in no particular order, are Marcia Kulak, Phyllis Dawson, Deb Furness, and Derek DeGrazia. So there are five of us on that panel.
Now, this being a selection trial, now we've got a few months left. What is the process for anyone that the selectors are keeping an eye on, obviously, but what are the formal requirements now leading up to the final selection?
Well, the selection period for the Olympics actually started at the beginning of 2015. So we had designated selection trials in 2015 and 2016. So this was the first one for this year, and obviously, you know, no getting around it, that was probably the most important one. However, not everybody is on the same track. There's going to be some very good horses going to Jersey Fresh. We have a few horses over at Badminton this weekend. I believe that, at least in North America, that Bromont is the final selection trial. That is getting a little bit late, just, you know, as far as how Bennett backs up to, you know, when the horses really have to come back and work into work so they can get evaluated before we come up with the short list later in June. So Bromont is pushing it a little bit time-wise, but, you know, technically it's still a selection trial, so we will be up there watching there again. And I think Tattersall's in Europe, in Ireland, is going to be one, as well as Samir. But then I think that's about it.
All right. And the long list is announced when?
We will invite, I don't know how many horses, but after the selection trials happen, the selection will get together. We'll draw up a quite a significant long-ish list of horses that we are going to ask to come to Virginia on the weekend of June 18th and 19th to be evaluated again by our vets. And then on Monday, June 20th, the selectors will meet, and that is the day that we will come up with the official team and alternates. And then later in kind of the second week or so in July, there'll be a training session, and then the Great Meadow Nations Cup and CIC will be the final trial for the forces, the final kind of mandatory outing before the Olympics. And then, and then they'll train some more and then go to the Olympics.
And then they'll ship out. And how many on the team and how many alternates and who would travel in total?
Yeah, there'll be. I'm not sure how many will be. We will name the 14 members, and then alternates. I'm not sure whether they'll be ranked or not at that time. And then we send four team members, and only one reserve horse can travel to Brazil. So 14 members and one reserve will go.
And are you familiar at this point on the quarantine requirements, or you know, if there are any, what the process is once they ship from here? What are the steps?
Yeah, that's a good question. That Joni Morris knows all those answers. She's like the guru and all that. I don't think they're overly arduous for Brazil. Certainly nothing like Australia in 2000. But I'm not exactly sure of the quarantine requirements, to tell you the truth.
And how long that they need to be there before the competition begins?
Yeah, I think what we're planning on doing, and again, I don't know the exact time frame, but we will try to have the horses in Brazil for as short a time as possible. You know, obviously long enough that they can recover, but not so long that we found that it works a lot better to try to get in and get out a little bit efficiently than get there too far advanced.
And do you get to go?
I could. I think if I really, really wanted to, our job is basically done by then. Sometimes, you know, we've waited till the horses get to the venue to name the team, but that had changed over the last few championships. So I am not going to go. I will be glued to my computer screen and cheering everybody on and watching intently, but I have decided to not go. It is going to be, I think, a little bit of a... arduous isn't the right word, but it's not going to probably be the easiest venue to get around or to get to, and so I think a lot of the owners even are going to decide to you know, maybe get together at a certain place and kind of watch it together, and so I don't know how many people are actually going to be going over other than the riders and the support staff. I'm sure many others will go, but yeah. Well, if it was London again, I'd be there in a second.
Absolutely.
I'm going to be watching from home.
Well, I'm sure the team is going to hear you all cheering from wherever you are, and there'll be such support for this team to come back with the big medals.
Absolutely.
Well, wonderful, Bobby, and I'm sure it was a fabulous competition for you to be. And at Rolex, I mean, how many is that you've been to now? Do you remember?
Well, gosh, I don't know. I think I started going there, you know, grooming a couple of times, and then I competed there, I think, 7 or 8 times in the late 90s and throughout the 2000s, and then I've been there every year since, I'm sure, as a, you know, high-performance chairman and selector and all that. It's a privilege, really, to go back every year, and it never fails to be just a phenomenal competition that really just gets better and better, I think.
It certainly does. Well, thank you very much for coming and sharing your impressions of this year's event. And, of course, good luck to the team in their final road to Rio. Thank you so much, Bobby.
Thank you, Chris. Take care.
And now, Lauren Kiefer joins me to review this year's event, where she, for the second time, finished runner-up on the Mare Veronica. Hi, Lauren. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Chris. Great to be here.
Well, a big congratulations on that runner-up place at Rolex. I mean, this mare delivers for you every time. You must have an expectation of her now, but she certainly did deliver, didn't she?
Yes, I'm thrilled with her. You know, we certainly went into this year with a goal and a plan, and she certainly delivered.
Well, how did it feel compared to 2 years ago? You had a slightly better dressage, so that got you off to a good start. A little bit lower down the order than you were in 2014, but nonetheless, I mean, your preparation seemed to be spot on coming into this year's event, but a selection trial nonetheless. Did you feel that pressure, and how did it feel going into your dressage?
For sure. You know, I try to put pressure on myself to deliver every time, and certainly with her, it's a bit expected. She has gone in and improved her dressage score at every outing she's done at the 4-star level. So, you know, I have to be happy at that. And, you know, I was higher up a couple of years ago with a not as good score, but I think that just speaks to the quality of the field that we've had this year and how much Rolex is attracting very, very competitive riders.
Now, you take this kind of pressure pretty well. You seem to be the coolest cucumber, but going into there, knowing what's at stake, how did you feel, Lauren, you know, about this year's competition and what it meant to you?
You know, there was a lot to, you know, I more just felt like I really needed to continue on our program of consistency and try to improve upon that consistency. You know, there's a lot to lose, but there's also a lot to gain, and I'm certainly not one that wants to go out and be careful for the risk of losing something. I believe that you kind of have to take some risks to be competitive. So, you know, I went into it with that kind of mindset.
Well, of course, you had two rides, but the mare was the one that knew her way around the horse park well. If you look at the course compared to what it was in the past, and knowing Derek's courses so well and the tactics and what he needed to draw out of riders this year under actually pretty bad conditions. It was pretty yucky out there, wasn't it? So talk about the track, Lauren, and, you know, how that road compared to how she went round in the past.
You know, certainly a couple of years ago, the footing, the weather was perfect and we had ideal conditions. Derek is a genius of a course designer, and I think it really, you know, this year's course, it really shook up the standings, but without any, you know, tragedies or taking its toll or punishing the horses. There was a big difference in the ground from going earlier. I went early in the day on my first ride, Landmarks Monte Carlo, that's owned and bred by Jacqueline Mars, and he had a very foot-perfect ground and one of the quickest of the day, so I was thrilled with him. But certainly on Veronica, she went quite late in the day, and I had to spend a lot of my ride hunting for good ground. You know, the fences kind of came as they went, but I had to really focus to give her the best ground possible so she didn't have to struggle out of the mud too much. But luckily, she's a small mare, and she's pretty light on her feet, so she stayed on top of the ground, and she was very, very fit heading into this competition, so she had plenty of run at the end.
Well, obviously, you've got the experience of knowing how to tune her up for a 4-star. Now, did you do anything different in your preparation when you say she was supremely fit coming into this? What was different?
You know, and it wasn't so much that the program's changed, but she certainly, you know, she's done a lot of CTIs now. She did a lot of big tracks last year. Bramham and Blenheim are both known for being fitness courses, and I think, you know, it's something. Fitness is something that builds too over the years. They kind of get stronger and stronger, and the more they kind of run those kind of tracks, they have even more of a base to them. So, you know, she's run a lot of, you know, 10, 11 minute tracks. And so, you know, she's got a great base to her. And then, you know, we have a very good program and plan for getting the horses fit for their 3 days. And, you know, it showed, because both her and Monte Carlo were full run at the end, recovered super fast, and were fresh the next day.
Talk us through the course, Lauren. As you said, you went a bit later on in the day, and it is a course that would always demand respect of the riders, and given the conditions that you had, what were your initial impressions compared to how it rode?
Surprisingly enough, and this rarely happens, everything kind of rode plan A. You know, I went out on my first horse with a plan, and I had plan I at every fence and combination. The same thing really happened with Veronica. I knew how Steph was riding at that point. And, you know, it rarely happens that the fences all ride the way you expected them to, but they really did this time.
And were there any questions out there that, you know, you took a second, third, fourth, even fifth look at before you rode it?
Yeah. You know, Derek always makes questions that are quite rider frighteners, but you also, at this point, you know, if you attack the questions, the horses will read them. And Derek has a very incredible talent to know kind of what the horses will see things as. So even, you know, for example, the hollow at the back of the course, everyone thought that was an incredibly difficult question. And I think almost all the horses read it the straight route right away.
Yeah, just 4 and 4 made it look easy. And you made it look easy all the way around. How did you like the new water?
You know, it was something new to have to do that many waters, and I think the new water rode well. You know, it was a big fence jumping in that you really had to respect, and the corner coming out was big also. But it also the same thing, you know, if you got a good shot to the first one and kept your eye on the out, the horses picked it up right away and jumped it beautifully.
And how did she finish, given that you said she was supremely fit and pull out the next day? Did you have the horse that you expected?
Yeah, you know, she was really full of herself the next morning. I actually had to jog twice because she basically ran sideways down the jog strip and jigged and leaped around. So, you know, and for the show jumping, certainly she didn't feel like she'd run a CCI the day before. You know, she felt like she was coming out fresh and sure jumped fresh. So I was thrilled with her because it was quite a big course and it caused a lot of problems. And, you know, I think the beginning of the show jumping course is quite open. And then the end, he asked you to make some kind of rollbacks and small turns and combinations. And, you know, the tired horses, that really kind of took their toll on them.
Well, there were riders as the course went on, as the field went on during the day, that did make the time a little bit better. But it snuck up on you just a little bit, didn't it?
Yes, just the one.
But altogether, obviously, an amazing performance, Lauren. What was your biggest takeaways from this year compared to 2014?
You know, 2014 was a bit of a pleasant surprise. And this year, there certainly was a goal and a lot of preparation going into it. But I think the biggest takeaway was, you know, we have the same program. We have the same, we train our horses the same and everything else. And I have an amazing group of people and the team behind me. And I think the biggest takeaway was that our program's working and that it's not a fluke. It's, you know, we'll keep producing repeat performances, hopefully.
Well, as you mentioned, the team behind you, no rider can do it alone. Let's talk about who was there as your main support team, Lauren, and the people you want to give a shout out to, because your family have been tremendously supportive along the way, haven't they?
Yes, my mom and dad are very, very supportive. They come to almost every event. They have their camper. They really enjoy Kentucky because it's actually one of the closest for them because we're from Southern Illinois, so it's actually not a long drive for them. And then Shannon Kinsley, who's been a really good friend for over a decade and then has been traveling and grooming for me for almost 2.5 years now, I think, and we've been all over the world together, and she takes amazing care of the horses, along with our new groom, Jim Kane, and then Sarah McKenna, who I've worked with for over a decade and is my barn manager. And then I have my girls that ride for me at home when I'm gone, Jess Brumfield and Lauren Mayer, and, you know, the Sue Clark that runs the whole barn, all of our, or the whole, you know, the breeding program and the young horses and everything else. Then we also, you know, just all the staff down at Stonehall and all over Stonehall Farm. You know, it does take a team effort and it takes a village. And, you know, it gets said again and again, but it can't be said enough that it takes a whole lot of people to just get one person and one horse to 3 day.
You've got an army going there, Lauren.
Yes. It's quite the army and, in my opinion, the best in the world.
Yeah, well, clearly producing the results for you. So congratulations to the whole of the team. So let's, before you go, look at what's next for you, because obviously you have many other horses back at the barn. But talk a little bit about what the mare will do now after her break and Monte Carlo and the rest of your team. What should we look out for?
You know, we've got a lot of horses going this year. You know, I'm actually sitting on Vermiculus right now, because he's prepping for Jersey Fashion Bromont. And then, you know, luckily the girls here have got the horses ticking over, and so they're ready to rock and roll. But, you know, we haven't planned much past Kentucky with Veronica and Patrick. I'm thrilled with how they came out of it. They'll certainly have some goals this summer and fall. But in the next week or so, I guess we'll probably be sitting down and making a plan for them.
And a summer ahead that really could be potentially very exciting for you. So I'm sure fingers and toes crossed, especially Mum and Dad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, again, a huge congratulations, Lauren, for finishing runner-up. And the very best of luck for the summer ahead and your partnership with this mare.
Great. Thank you very much.
And that's it for this week's program. We'll be back next week when Andy Bowles and Rob Burke will be here to talk about intercollegiate eventing. In the meanwhile, don't forget to keep up with all the latest news at the website useventing.com and follow us on social media channels at useventing. Until next week, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world, and enjoy your eventing.